98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
Devin Booker is not an all-star. He's something even better. A martyr. Look at the outcry across the NBA. Players are rushing to his defense. No less of an authority than LeBron James called Booker the most disrespected player in the league. LeBron even used 3 exclamation points for that matter. That'll make Booker feel good. It might give him an additional edge, especially on marquee stages where he can prove his point and maybe score about 60 of them. But Booker isn't the guy who needs much motivation. He's also a guy who's too mature to stage any kind of prolonged pity party, especially around the All-Star game. Plus, he'll likely end up in that game if and when Anthony Davis pulls out with an injury. So, this is all going to end up just fine. And when you see two Suns players on the same court during an All-Star game, it's going to be a powerful moment. The only risk is if Booker blames this snub on the perils of playing pro basketball in Phoenix, where we have gone 10 years without a playoff berth. But here's the deal with that. As long as Chris Paul is around, the Suns are going to keep winning, and they're going to the playoffs, and they're going to start playing really important basketball games. And then everyone will know Devin Booker, just how good he is at his job. Better late than never. All right, the Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. Shop online at ChapmanBMW.com.
Book going to be fine. Book is going to be fine. Mont said it this morning, and it's true for me too. I came here because of Book. You know what I mean? Don't make any mistake about that. Like, I came to Phoenix because of Book, you know, and it's because of who Book is and the way that he plays and the way, like, he channels his energy and whatnot. So Book already plays with a chip on his shoulder. So, yeah, we good over here.
That was Chris Paul today after shoot around before the Suns take on the Charlotte Hornets tonight. And I think he hits on a lot of good things there. He's going to be fine. Like you said in the blast, and we had the discussion, there's still a really good chance Devin Booker's wearing an All-Star uniform on March 7th as an injury replacement for Anthony Davis. But we also played the soundbite earlier from Tom Chambers, and I know a lot of people feel the same way TC does, like, wow, people that throw around the disrespect term. I'd hate to be on the receiving end of that. You know, Devin Booker didn't get selected. He's really going to take it out on the next opponent, which happens to be the Hornets tonight. I kind of hope that doesn't happen tonight. I kind of hope Devin Booker has, you know, another ultra-efficient 30-point game in a 30-point blowout where he can sit in the fourth quarter as opposed to him going off for 65 or 70 points, because I think that would add fuel to the fire. If Devin Booker didn't make it first game out, he explodes because he feels dissed a little bit.
Uh-huh.
That might be part of the issue. I agree with what Chris Paul said there. He's got a chip on his shoulder anyway.
And he's going to end up in the game anyway. And I'll bet you that Chris Paul probably said that to Devin Booker. Don't worry, Book, you're going to be there with me. So now you've got Chris Paul also testifying on Devin Booker's behalf, and so I think the net effect of this is going to be people saying things about Devin Booker that wouldn't have been said had he made the All-Star game, and he's going to make it anyways. So, and then he's going to be able to kind of at least target an enemy because LeBron James helped him do that. Like I said in our interview with Jeff Van Gundy, LeBron James used a word that I think took this to a different level by using the word disrespected. And so you ask yourself, okay, what is LeBron James saying here? Vinny brought up a really good point earlier when you said maybe part of it is fans in Phoenix and other markets tired of being force-fed Zion and Luka all the time. And what Luka did last night was sensational. He's a phenomenal player. But you know what I'm saying? It's people here look at Devin Booker in the same way Mavericks fans look at Luka. I'll guarantee you that. I don't think you'd find a Suns fan who would trade. Well, maybe you would. Let me scratch that from the record. Let me just say that because of that, it kind of leads down that road of course, Phoenix never gets anything from the league. We don't matter. It doesn't matter.
Here we go again.
Here we go again.
I mean, It's just been so. I think we're getting a little bit of a complex here.
A
decade will do that to a fan base, certainly. But we act like, oh, Phoenix never gets anything. There's been three different times in this team's history where they've had three All-Stars in 1 year. As recently as 2007, they had three All-Stars. I hope what we're seeing now is you know, a reminder, a wake-up call, if it was needed, to the front office and ownership of the Suns, that, you know, you can empower the right people to put together an NBA product. And it wasn't the right people for a really long time. I hope that's the lasting effect of all of this. We never go through another 10-year period where we're begging for a playoff appearance or an all-star.
Yeah. And then also...
Real quick, don't you think there is something about the Suns fan base that they enjoy being disrespected? As crazy as that sounds?
No.
I
think you're using the wrong term. What is happening? They are galvanized by this. It's a rallying cry. And I'll tell you what, I do believe that this maybe will help the Suns in the long run, because there is a faction of fans who steadfastly insist that they've been done with the Suns. Now, I have doubts about that. I think if you were a longtime Suns fan, it's impossible not to watch this team. It just is. So whether you dig the owner and what this team has been through or not, you're watching this year's team. But this kind of moment, it's a rallying cry. It galvanizes everybody. It makes us, see, we only got each other. Nobody else has got our backs but us. That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that can be good. That can be good. It can create some noise and some more energy around this basketball team. And again, I think it's okay that this is if this could be directly tied to basketball fans in Arizona, and that is to say fans were allowed to elect everybody, and low voter turnouts in Phoenix caused Devin Booker to miss the All-Star team, and some buster who didn't belong got in front of him. That's not what happened here. But if that was the case, that would get me worried. That would make me think, you know what? Book is going to go, the minute Chris Paul is out of here, so am I. This is a function of basketball coaches, NBA coaches. I have a sneaking belief Monty Williams feared this, maybe even saw it coming when he defended Devin Booker a couple nights ago and touted his all-star candidacy. I think, and like Jeff Van Gundy said, a lot of these coaches, they don't spend a minute with this stuff. They have assistants do it. They don't pore over data. They probably,
Wait, next thing you're going to tell me now, college football coaches don't actually cast their ballots for the coaches' poll.
No.
What?
Yeah, you didn't know that, did you?
Don't they know that voting is a privilege?
Don't they know the All-Star game is sacred?
the All-Star game we didn't even want to be played this year.
Right. Right. So I think that, I just think LeBron's role in this is fascinating to me. Because the word he used is, that's a heavy word, man. Most disrespected player in the league? Wow.
I mean, again, 2 years ago, there was some bubbling talk about Devin Booker maybe being an all-star. And the Suns were nowhere close to being a competitive basketball team. 2 years ago, that was the 19-win team. They've already surpassed that this year. Last year, it felt like it was deserved. This year, it felt like it was deserved. Again, when there's only 12 spots and you have 15 teams in each conference, this is going to happen every single year. Mm-hmm. But it didn't stop the national reaction from fans, from media, from a lot of players in the league about Devin Booker getting the snub. In fact, the biggest snub is Devin Booker, according to TNT's Candace Parker.
Devin Booker, without a doubt. I think the way that Devin Booker has played in Phoenix, where people were questioning whether he could play meaningful basketball, and now to have a point guard like Chris Paul and to play the way he did in the bubble, I just feel as though he should be. He's going to be an all-star because he's going to replace Anthony Davis, but I think it changes things. There's a little bit of an asterisk by it when you get voted in and fill in for Anthony Davis.
I agree with that. There's a little bit of the luster taken off when you're a late replacement. But, and I'm not shocked by this. I kind of saw this coming. I'm not all that infuriated by it because I think the process will play out. Mm-hmm. But the one part I can't get past is what Candace Parker said there about meaningful basketball from Devin Booker in a Phoenix Suns uniform. And because of his development and because of a shrewd front office move made by James Jones to bring in Chris Paul, we are seeing the definition of meaningful basketball in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And that was not enough to check the All-Star box for Devin Booker. And that would, if I was in Book shoes, that would frustrate me.
Well, yeah.
Take a step back for the team. Give up a lot of what you had done from a statistical basis to lend itself to wins, mm-hmm. and you've done that without a peep, and you don't get rewarded for it from the coaches. That would make me mad.
I agree with that. I mean, I would not argue with that. I do think, but the idea that we just supposed that the message to Devin Booker was, you got to start winning basketball games. There was no NBA coach who came out on the record and said, Devin Booker will be an all-star when he starts winning. He needs to start winning to satisfy our standards.
Oh, that was the chiming in from the media.
It was the chiming in from the media. It was what we all assumed to be true, and it probably was true. But again, it's not like that was a fact.
But it's even more than that. Even though it was as a substitute last year, people thought that was the him breaking through the glass ceiling moment.
Yeah.
And once you made it once, and once you had that bubble exposure, that was it. He's an all-star every year. We had Amin on. We had other people pretty much say that.
There were people who were convinced he was going to be an all-star because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, no, he's in. He's a made man now.
Winning matters, but it didn't matter as much this year. Chicago's got an all-star in Zach LaVine. They're under 500. Washington's got one of Bradley Beal. They're way under 500. Dallas is 500. They get Luka. Zion's in at 13-17. So that's, you know, four all-stars from losing teams. So the consistency just isn't there.
Right. So clearly being on a winning team doesn't matter at all in some guys' cases. I like the analogy moving the goalposts in this particular instance. I think that's very, very true. But I think that happens all the time. It's hard to differentiate who's more deserving. Once again, it's to me, you can make all these arguments and I nod my head and I agree with all of it. Devin Booker deferred to Chris Paul early on. But I told you guys before the show began, I watched every minute Devin Booker has played in 2021. And to me, he was borderline. He has not played at an all-star level all year long. Now, maybe part of that was early on when he was deferring. But it's really been about the last 10 to 15 games that he's really popped and been Devin Booker.
Oh, you mean that stretch where the Suns are 12-2?
Well, I'm not. But again, I'm just.
I know.
Yeah, of course I mean that. But again, that's. I mean, I really honestly believe that the number one story of the Phoenix Suns in the first half of the season is Chris Paul and his impact on this basketball team.
I agree, too, and I expected this to be the case. Here was Chris Paul talking today after shoot around on his experience and what this means to be an all-star.
Man, you know, it means a lot. There's so many people that, that make it possible for me to even play. You know, I think a lot of times people see you out there during the games, but the training staff here, my own personal team, Dave, Donnie, Ann, Shelly, Aaron, my chef, my family, you know what I mean? Everybody plays a huge role in everything that goes on, so I'm grateful for, you know, the Suns organization, my teammates, you know, and my own personal team.
He also talked about the team through 30 games later today. I believe it's at 1:00. We'll get a look at what the second half schedule looks like. The NBA is going to release that second half schedule, which is just a weird feeling. Games played in 3 weeks. We don't know where they're going to be just yet. But he did talk about the team and where they are right now.
You know, this is a year for everybody. You know, we didn't have much of a training camp. We didn't get an off season to spend time together. So we're still building, and we've been having to build and play games at the same time. Our defense is pretty good right now, but we know that there's still layers and layers that we can get better at. That's the thing about being on a team like this. We know we're not where we want to be, but we're a work team. Coach talks about it all the time, and we're going to keep working. And, you know, when you've been in this league long enough, no offense to y'all, but it doesn't matter what people say on the outside. The only thing that matters is what we say in our locker room, what we say in our practices, and how we feel as a team.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that as well. Devin Booker did not speak today. The plan, we were notified, is that he will speak after the game tonight. So we'll get his reaction after the Hornets game on not making the All-Star team. But in terms of big picture for the Suns, yeah, this stings a lot right now for Suns fans because they wanted to see their guy rewarded. Kendrick Perkins on with Doug and Wolf this morning. Looked past the All-Star snub and kind of what Chris Paul just did, focused on the direction that this team is headed.
He has a great GM in James Jones. In my eyes, he has a great coach and mentor in Monty Williams. And now he has a great vet, a great future Hall of Famer in Chris Paul to learn from. And right now, they are winning, and the future is bright. When you look at their roster with the young core, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and Devin Booker. That four right there, in the next 3 years, they are going to be a force to be reckoned with, even when Chris Paul and maybe Jay Crowder are gone. So right now, they're moving in the right direction. And like I said yesterday, I picked the Phoenix Suns to finish top five in the Western Conference. But the way that they're playing this high-level basketball on both ends of the floor, if they're playing this way come postseason, we might need to start mentioning them as being a title favorite towards the end of the year.
That's all. I mean, when you hear stuff like
title
that.
Title favorite.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it was against a shorthanded Portland team, but seeing this team, and even past that, they played other shorthanded teams during this stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing finally everybody together, healthy and available, and you know, the saying was the roster has 15 NBA players. Well, Damian Jones isn't here anymore. They have 14 NBA players on this team right now, and that's what real title contenders look like, is when you get that many guys that can contribute, and you get veterans that, you know, sometimes get stuck on the end of the bench. Etuan Moore didn't play for a really long time at the beginning of the season. Langston Galloway was playing. Now he's not playing. But those guys are still at the end of the bench, and you know what they can do.
Frank Kaminsky doesn't play. Some games he starts.
Yeah, a deep playoff run would not surprise me in the least with this current cast of healthy characters.
Well, I would. It's my expectation. And by deep, what do you mean? By deep, you mean a chance to win a second round series, getting through the first, and a coin flips chance at least of winning the second.
Yeah, and getting to the conference finals. I mean, it sounded so foreign, and when the Chris Paul trade was made, I think Kendrick Perkins was among the national voices that said they could be in the mix for a conference final. And you're like, come on, pump the brakes a little bit. But now we've seen 30 games of proof, and especially these last 14 games.
Yeah.
It's a really good basketball team.
Yeah. It really, really is. And I think that, once again, when you talk about ceiling and room for added growth between now and the end of the season, I'd be very bullish on the Suns as well, because the chemistry, whatever it is that the team has, it's only going to get better, particularly with Devin Booker and Chris Paul, as they really start to truly play off one another. And then, of course, DA is the huge wild card.
Do you, you talked about, will Devin Booker use this as fuel? Will we see something different tonight? Do you think the fans, you're going to notice something different in the fans tonight?
I noticed the fans more so in the last game. And yes, there was, and going back to last year, the first game after the snub was against Oklahoma City, and there was a different energy in the building that night.
Mm-hmm.
They felt like they had, you know, been had their rug swept out from underneath their feet. They were mad, and I think the ones that are there tonight that are really dialed into what the Suns are doing, they will be mad. They won't have the opportunity to boo a member of the Charlotte Hornets for taking a spot that they believe belonged to Devin Booker. But yeah, I think there's going to be some angry people there tonight.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be. And I'm not certain that Devin Booker won't go off tonight. But again, I don't think that that really needs to be this basketball team's focus.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be winning games. Do what you're doing now. I'd be really disappointed if tonight's game suddenly became feed Devin the ball so we can make a statement. That would be disappointing. That would not be a basketball team focusing on the right thing.
Absolutely not. And I fully expect Devin Booker, like he has all season long, to let the game come to him. And I mentioned it in the Portland game. Had that game been closer, that might have been a game where Devin Booker went off for 45-plus. He looked that dominant, that dialed in. But they didn't have to count on him that much, and he didn't play a second in the fourth quarter. This team's got bigger things to worry about, and I think it will be rectified anyway. But the architect of it, too, James Jones got some love earlier in the show from Jeff Van Gundy, and only the style that Jeff Van Gundy could do it, he gave James Jones credit.
I love, first of all, James Jones, he doesn't get the credit he's due right now. Like, he's done some really good things, and at the times they've been controversial, you know, like, oh, he picked Cam Johnson too high. Oh, Cam Johnson's good, you know, like, he's a good player. All right. You know, did they sacrifice too much by getting Chris Paul? Not really. They got a steal. You know, and on and on. So the roster building has been good, really good.
Yeah, and we had Al McCoy on yesterday, and he said, this has always been a Suns town.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Suns made it really difficult for it to remain that way for the last decade. And that's what the bummer of all of the, if there is a bummer in the Suns finally turning this around and you know, being formidable again, is that it's happening at a time where they can't enjoy full attendance in a brand new refurbished arena, because I don't think we'd have any doubt now on what the feeling is around this city for this team if everything else was normal.
Yeah, listen, I think that it's every conversation that I strike up with somebody outside of this radio station, it's the first questions that I'm asked now. Man, how about those Suns, huh? So it's there. It's definitely growing.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think you're right. I think the signs of it are muted because of the pandemic, because, you know, it's a lot of factors that are...
So it'll be interesting with the timeline of how they continue to let more fans into the arena, because it'll probably continue to build throughout the season to maybe it culminates in the playoffs, where that's the first time, I'm not saying a full arena.
But pretty close to it.
But like, you know, 75% capacity or something.
Uh-huh.
And that would really electric.
All right. Yeah, no doubt about it.
I know it's not the end of the show, but I got a bonus Vinny Joe trivia question for you guys.
Okay. Oh.
Now, Chris Paul, by making the All-Star team, is only the third player in NBA history to make All-Star teams while a member of four different organizations. Who are the other two?
Shaq.
Yes. Can you name the organizations he did it for?
He did it for the Suns. He did it for the Lakers. He did it for the Magic. And he did it for Miami.
Yes. Jarrett, you're usually good at these. You got one?
I have to think about it. So one player made an All-Star team with four different teams.
Yes. That is the words that came out of his mouth, Jared.
I'm stalling for...
You want the teams?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Washington.
Uh-huh.
Atlanta. Houston. Philadelphia. Not necessarily in that order.
All right,
see what I did there? Moses Malone.
Oh, okay.
Who actually, as a rookie in the ABA, made an All-Star team, too. So he actually made five different All-Stars.
I didn't even know he played for Washington.
He did. For 2 years. It was the last All-Star the Wizards / Bullets had. No, I'm joking.
Phil Chenier.
Gilbert Arenas.
Ernie DiGregorio.
Wes Unseld.
Robin Hayes.
Kevin Greavy.
Kevin Greavy. That's great.
Good gravy, what a player.
Great.
Coming up next.
That's great.
Bick's had a lot of thoughts on the Tiger Woods accident coverage yesterday. We'll give you the latest with that and the condition of Tiger next. Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I still get the sense.
Pickley and Murata here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Still a lot of reaction rolling in from the Tiger Woods accident yesterday. Happened while we were on the air, got notified of it, and the statement that came out from the L.A. County Sheriff's Office that used the phrase jaws of life to extricate him, it was a bit semantical. They did not have to use the jaws of life. It was not life-threatening, the injuries, but substantial injuries, substantial surgeries done to repair the legs of Tiger Woods. But man, it was a frenzied free for all in terms of news coverage yesterday.
Ben. Well, it was really surreal because for a little while you didn't know how grave the danger was to Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. When I first heard of it, a golf person sent me a text that said, "We don't even know if he's alive." And that was the truth. Nobody did. The flow of information was very slow. It was cryptic. And then you had the pictures and the images. And it turned out to be, it was very much, it kind of felt like the Kobe story to me in a lot of ways with a much better ending for Tiger Woods. The coverage yesterday, I know I'm really naive about this stuff, but I have been very ideological when it comes to journalism in the past. If you call yourself a news network, you really have to cover more than a car crash just because it's titillating and because there's a famous person. And I could not believe what I was witnessing last night.
But you were witnessing it.
I was interested in it. I was hungry for news. No, I did not stay put. I did not stay glued to the coverage. When they started interviewing medical experts who didn't know anything about Tiger Woods to talk about the injuries in a breathless way, it was really ridiculous. But it checked every box at a time when a lot of those networks are dealing with massive drops in ratings, post-election, post-insurrection, post-everything. Okay, here's the thing I want to say about Tiger Woods. I think Tiger Woods, this is going to be quite a haul for him to make it back from this, and I don't think a lot of people like his chances. Ben Hogan, a famous golfer from way back when, he was once involved in a terrible car accident, and he recovered, and he got back out, and he won majors after that. Tiger's 45. He's looking at 2 years, I would guess, 2 years minimum of just healing and then rehabbing and getting enough strength. People who know golf have said and will say if there's any blessing to be found, most of his injuries were to his right leg. And as a right-handed golfer, you need your left leg for support a little more than your right leg. You can swing the right leg a little more. You can put less pressure on it than otherwise. And I know that to be a fact because when I tore my meniscus, if it was the left meniscus that I tore, I would have had a much different time trying to play golf than my right one. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Then there's, will Tiger even try and attempt to do something like this? I'm going to read you something that came from the mouth of Scott Boras, and I think it's very, very poignant, and it has to do with just the pressure that great athletes feel and what it does to them, okay? Quote, "They know it, they feel it, they have expectations, and then they have a dedication to it, and often that pressure, because of that pressure, they have an edge, and that edge causes really a lot of issues in their lives, because there is this fear that goes with it, and the greatest fear is, I have to be what I should be. I've got to be the guy that I should be, and it wears them out. Because once they have the great season, the most difficult season is always the next season because of the expectations, the ease of their performance, and the brilliance that the fans see. It's like they should be able to go and give that every day. Uh-huh. And there is almost an internal anger about what they go through to have to repeat that greatness," end quote. I read that, and it stopped me in my tracks because Tiger Woods has kind of become an empathetic figure, and he's become a much better person. He used to be, he became really a jackass to deal with, mostly because of his handlers, and he changed, and he became more human, and he became more open, and we cheered him again. There was redemption, and now he's got this to come back from.
The winning the Masters, after years of not winning anything, and the Masters too, that event, and then going off the green and you know, hugging his son, mm-hmm. that was like the final chapter in the ultimate redemption story of Tiger Woods in many people's eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been like the end camera shot before the credits rolled in a Tiger Woods movie.
Without a doubt. Him walking up, screaming, pumping his fist with Charlie next to him, his arm around him. That's exactly right. That is, I mean, that looks, it looked like the end of a Disney movie about Tiger Woods.
Well,
you're absolutely right.
I mean, you probably couldn't write, it played out like a Disney. You wouldn't script that, certainly. It seemed too improbable. The lows were too low. Whether it was injury or addiction or off the course indiscretions, I mean, it seemed impossible. I was convinced he'd never win another Masters. Wright Thompson, who is a senior writer for ESPN, actually talked about that on SportsCenter about Tiger Woods, what winning at the Masters meant at that point.
I do know that Tiger Woods inspired lots of people to think that there was nowhere in the world that they weren't welcome. And of the many, many things he has given sports fans and citizens, I think that is at or near the top of the list.
Yeah, and there's also the question, too, and you brought this up earlier, and people may forget it, but even on Monday's show before the accident happened yesterday, you had talked about Tiger Woods giving an interview from the Genesis Invitational to Jim Nantz, where he talked about where he is in terms of progress on being back for the Masters this year. As it returns to its normal place on the calendar. And he said he was, very stiff and doing very rudimentary things in the gym. Bob Harrig, ESPN golf writer, kind of updated that even a little further, where Tiger's rehab was before the accident.
It's kind of been a mystery to all of us. We've all been curious to know where he stood in relation to, his possible comeback, which obviously now is way in delay. But he was 9 weeks past the procedure, and it's believed to be kind of a 2.5 to 3 month recovery. So we were sort of into that window now where he might be looking like he could be coming back. He was quite pessimistic in his interview with Jim Nantz the other day, but yet he was hitting balls at that outing yesterday. He was hitting balls a couple of weeks after the surgery, not going full out, mind you, but still it was a minimally invasive surgery, one that he was walking the next day. And so when he was talking about not having ramped it up yet, that kind of led to some concern. Like, was there a setback, or was he just not feeling great yet? And, we're probably never going to know how close he was to getting back.
Yeah, I mean, and now you talk about moving to the future, what will Tiger Woods' condition be? I know some people are hoping for the best that he'll be able to walk again normally. You talked about the saving grace of it being more serious injuries to the right leg. So if he golfs again, it's going to be sometime down the road. But I can guarantee you this. If you like redemption stories, if you loved Tiger Woods' redemption story of winning the Masters in 19 after everything you went through, the stage is set for another great redemption story, potentially.
Yeah, I just hope that between now and then that nothing comes out about what is in his system. Were there drugs, were there narcotics that caused this? Because Tiger had an addiction to painkillers that was born from all his back surgeries. This is not breaking news. It's not talking out of school. It was all in that documentary. Even before the auto accident yesterday, single car accident yesterday, there had been a couple of photos that kind of flew around the golf community, if you will, and they didn't have the same context because this hadn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
But Tiger did an interview with Jim Nantz, and he looked kind of soft and kind of zoned out, and then there's another picture, and people were making fun of him. Man, is he hammered? What? Is he ripped? What's the deal? And it was just left at that. But what happened yesterday in some of that coverage I saw, some of those guys were getting dangerously close to kind of saying what you shouldn't be saying at that time, even though there can be suspicions and concerns based on priors. One dude flat out said on TV during an interview that that he was not surprised because painkillers are a part of Tiger's life. Now, that indeed is the fear, and I really hope that's not the case, because then this story takes a mm-hmm. another turn.
Mm-hmm.
Then Tiger Woods is endangering other human beings.
I mean, even if that was the case, I'm convinced that was the case, because you hear the sheriff's office say, it was a high rate of speed in an area where accidents are common along that stretch of road. We had the report from the television director who said he almost got run over in the parking lot by an agitated Tiger Woods who seemed to be running late. I mean, I think he did endanger people.
Yeah, well,
you do that
anytime true.
You drive right. irresponsibly.
Yes, that is very true. That is very true. But given his history, I think it's
yeah, I agree with you,
you
on
know
that.
What I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Coming up next, how much did Kyler Murray improve as a starter in year two? We'll give you some expert analysis of that next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
From the Octane Community Studios, it is Bickley and Murata here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Thanks for tuning in. As always, we appreciate it. We'll be joined in a little bit by David Peralta as D-backs All Access Week continues here on the show and on the radio station. Kyler Murray, frequent topic of discussion on this show and others. He is one of the most visible athletes we have in Phoenix these days. Just completed year two as a starting quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. And I know the question is, and we can all agree on this to varying degrees, the question is how much did Kyler Murray improve? Because I don't think there's any doubt he did improve in year two. And if you just look at the raw numbers, his number of dropbacks increased, his attempts increased, his completion increased, his completion percentage, yardage, yards per attempt, touchdowns, interceptions stayed the same. He had less balls batted down at the line of scrimmage. He was sacked less. He ran for more yardage. That's improvement across the board.
Yeah.
But I find this interesting that, and you pointed this out to me. Pro Football Focus recently had a tweet about Kyler Murray's improvement. How much from year to year overall grade? As a rookie, his overall grade as a starting quarterback was 64.2, which is not tremendous.
No.
But it did increase 18.6 points up to 82.8, which is a pretty good number for a full season for Kyler Murray. So I know it's just one tool, one view, and Pro Football Focus has a lot of believers and a lot of doubters. But I think that proves...
But it's analytics.
It's analytics, and it's unequivocal growth by Kyler Murray.
Yeah, yeah. Who's above Kyler Murray? Give me some other rankings. Do you have numbers?
I have to do a different search on that.
I'd love to know what the ceiling is, so just see do Patrick Mahomes or do Aaron Rodgers and see what that is. I'd like to see what the top guy gets. Yeah, so like you said, whether you believe in their methodology or not, that's a quantum, that's a big jump. That's a real big jump, and it's also an indication that he made big strides in a lot of areas. And I do agree with that. I think that he did, and I think I'm still very bullish, to use that word again, on Kyler Murray. But it all depends on his comfort level, and really, if and when he ever gets it.
Aaron Rodgers for comparison's sake, 94.5.
Okay.
By Pro Football Focus.
All right.
He won the MVP, but that's a 12-point difference.
Okay.
Which is less than the improvement he made from year one to year two, according to their scale.
Yeah. That's I think Kyler Murray is a top 10 quarterback right now.
Yeah, I think he's right on the cusp. I mean, who are the guys that you would definitely put above him? Mahomes?
Definitely Mahomes. You'd have to put Deshaun Watson. You'd have to put Aaron Rodgers. You'd have to put...
Josh Allen.
Russell Wilson
definitely gets above him.
Tom Brady?
Yes.
Yeah, how do you... See, I don't think I initially had Tom Brady ahead of him, but you can't... He's a Super Bowl champion.
All right, so once you get past those guys, you can make the argument, but, I mean, Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford?
No. I mean, they're good. I would rather have Kyler Murray. And a lot of that is not...
Ryan Tannehill?
It's hard to argue Tannehill.
Yeah, he's about as underrated as you're going to find ever at that position.
Yeah, to a discussion
we had...
People
refuse to believe he's good.
Lamar Jackson,
yeah. We had the discussion yesterday, too, or earlier this week, some point, about the way Kyler Murray's rushing yards broke out. So he had over 800 rushing yards. Well, Pro Football Focus has it divided between design plays and scrambles. And he did have more scrambling yards, but it was a lot closer than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
82 designed runs for 395 yards, 51 scrambles for 427 yards. Almost 50-50 differential there.
Wow.
Not what I expected to see.
Yeah.
I wonder how many of his touchdowns came on. He had 11 rushing touchdowns, too.
He did. Quite a few.
And that's a big part of his grade,
not
too.
Not enough at the end of the year, though.
His rushing grade was 86.5, which is higher than his overall grade.
Well, and that's, I mean, that was clearly the star of the Cardinals show. That was their ticket to greatness, Vinny.
You don't think there's 31 defensive coordinators that are figuring that out, too?
Yeah.
Earlier we had also talked about the perceived treatment that Ben Roethlisberger, longtime quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, was getting from the organization when Kevin Colbert became the latest GM to come out and give him the Les Snead treatment. Hey, he's a member of the team right now. He's on the roster. Art Rooney, the second team president, did sit down with Ben Roethlisberger and kind of clarified the whole situation. He said, quote, Ben Roethlisberger and I met yesterday morning. We had a productive meeting. We were able to discuss a lot of things that relate to where we are and where we want to go. Ben assured me that he is committed to coming back to help us win, and I told Ben that we would like to have him back to help us win a championship. We both understand that the next step is to work out Ben's contract situation. So identifying it is one thing. Being able to iron it out is something completely different because it's a cap hit of over $41 million, which doesn't work for the Steelers, even though they want Ben Roethlisberger back. That's some heavy lifting they're going to need to do to make it happen. And Ben Roethlisberger is going to have to do a lot of that lifting, too.
Yeah, and it's one of those deals where you just wonder what really is left out there for Ben Roethlisberger. And I said yesterday, the whole story of the Pittsburgh Steelers, that is about as wild as you'll ever encounter. A team that was 11-0, chasing undefeated status, and then now just cloaked in question marks.
Yeah, I mean, we can compare that to the plight of the 2020 Cardinals. That 6-3, not making the playoffs.
Yeah.
But imagine being 11-0 and then exiting in the first round after getting embarrassed by a team that you've pointed and laughed at for most of your existence.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then all along, all that time when they were losing games at the end of the year, they didn't want to deal with it because they didn't want to believe it was real. They wanted to keep everything positive and, okay, come on, we got a chance at this, and, man, crazy. So I don't know what Ben Roethlisberger has left, but he does strike me as he's a guy that is going to have a hard time saying goodbye.
Mm-hmm. And he's one of those guys that I can't picture in another uniform. Can you?
No,
I don't think there's any. I don't think there's that any is, appeal for many of the others.
There's also no obvious replacement for him if you're Pittsburgh.
That is true.
But Vinny's right about that. There's something about that guy wearing that uniform that if he just kind of rolled into like a Chargers jersey, you'd be like, what? It just wouldn't look right.
Yeah. But again, I didn't think we'd see Tom Brady in another jersey. Not only did we see him, he's hoisting the Lombardi Trophy in another jersey. Coming up next, Devin Booker's All-Star snub made us want to shout out a few choice words. We'll go through some of those next in Social Studies. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.